Hello and welcome to another all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro.
It's a really wonderful story, and we wanted to provide, you know, some knowledge and information about this incredible history so that people could learn more about Native American Catholics, learn more about the missionaries and the people that served this group of people to the present day.
That was Father Henry Sands of the Black and Indian Missions Office in the United States. They have just produced a film called Walking the Sacred Path, and so we're going to be speaking with Father Henry Sands about the film and also about the work that his office does in about 5 minutes. And after that, Mark Matthews will be with us to unpack the Pope's first encyclical, Magnifica Humanitas, on safeguarding the human person in the time of artificial intelligence. So you don't want to miss that conversation. That's in about 15 minutes. Mark Matthews with artificial intelligence. And then
anyone who's a mother knows that you're constantly creatively being resourceful and drawing upon your imagination to kind of like awaken wonder in your children and to inspire them and also to pour truth into them in a way, in a language that they can understand. And I feel like closer to God the Father because I get to pour into them creatively.
That's our featured artist of the week, Rebecca Rubillon. Rebecca has been on the program a few times over the years, but she's been busy with marriage and family. In fact, she's homeschooling her 5 children. But still, there is some music that we can play. Rebecca Rubillon will be with us in our second half hour to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. So that's in about 20, 25 minutes. Remember that the best way to listen to this program is on the Salt and Light Plus app. Get it wherever you download apps. Okay, so coming up, a conversation on the work of the Black and Indian Mission Office. But first, here's a song. Here's Rebecca Rubillon with her single, Tiny Car.
If I could go to outer space, I'd shoot right to the star I knew by name. If I had a bottle and a bit of ocean, I'd send out a message with scratch outs, except the words I miss and you. If I could go back to a better day and already be strapped in, and you'd take me for a ride in your tiny car, and we'd fly to a place where we could begin again. Trick on me, and I ran so far away. This time I'd stay right.
We're listening to Rebecca Rubillon with her single, Tiny Car. And we're going to be speaking with Rebecca Rubillon at the end of the program, so please stay tuned. The Catholic Church's relationship with Indigenous peoples in North America is one with a long and complex history, a history of missionary zeal and of painful wounds, but also of a faith that took deep root in many First Nations communities. Today, that story continues in the work at many parishes through the work of missionaries and organizations that are committed to walking together with Indigenous Catholics. There is now a new documentary that brings that journey with First Nations Catholics in the United States to the screen. It is titled Walking the Sacred Path, produced by the Black and Indian Mission Office. And so to tell us more, we are now joined by Father Henry Sands, director of the Black and Indian Mission Office. Father Henry, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's good to see you again.
Thank you. Great to see you, Deacon Pedro.
Yeah, you too. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You are First Nations.
Yes. Yes, I am from Bekajulong First Nation, which is in southwestern Ontario. It's an island, beautiful island located between Ontario and Michigan. And my parents are both Anishinaabe, Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi. My father was born in Bekajulong. I grew up there. My mother was from Michigan. I grew up in Michigan, and all of my ancestors are from Michigan originally. So my ancestors were first introduced to Catholicism in the first decade of the 1700s. Jesuit missionaries who had been in Huronia in Ontario went to northern Michigan after St. John the Brebeuf and companions were martyred, and they met my ancestors in northern Michigan.
Okay, wow. So you're part of that history. So for 400 years, you can say that your family or your ancestors have been Catholic.
300 years. Yeah, 300 some years. Yep.
And in that community that you grew up in, was that common? Was most of the community Catholic?
No. In the community where I grew up, I would say that there are more people who are Anglican, and then also people who are members of the United Church of Canada, people who are a member of a Pentecostal church. The percentage of Catholics is pretty low because there is not a Catholic church on the reservation. Mm. So for Catholics, there were two options: to cross the river to go to a town in Michigan called Algonac, or to cross the river and go to Port Lambton or Wallaceburg, which are in Ontario. So there were options for going to church, but the Jesuits actually tried to establish a mission in the 1800s. Did not get along well with the governing authorities, and the church was burned down, and they never went back.
Okay, wow. But still, you found your way eventually into the Catholic priesthood.
Right. Yeah, and it was eventually. So when I left home, I moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan to go to the University of Michigan, got involved with the charismatic community.
Oh, yeah.
And that was very foundational, instrumental for my life as an adult disciple of Christ. And then after being there for several years, I went to Toronto to get an MBA at the University of Toronto. Got involved with Opus Dei and with some other Catholics in the Toronto area, and that's when I began to perceive the Lord inviting me to the priesthood.
Okay.
So I began to perceive the Lord calling me in 1996, and I went back to Detroit to enroll in the seminary in 1999. It took me 3 years to figure out how to respond to the Lord's call. I initially wanted to be a religious priest, but the Lord heard of me. He wanted me to be a diocesan priest. So I went back to Detroit, entered the seminary in 1999, and I got ordained in 2005.
Okay, wow. And now you're the executive director of the Black and Indian Mission Office.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that office? Very brief, because I know it has a long history, but very briefly, and what work do you do?
Right. So this office is made up of three different organizations, the oldest one being the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions, which was founded in 1874. And then in 1884, an organization was created to administer the first national collection that was established in the Catholic Church in the United States. Today it's known as the Black and Indian Mission Collection. So we receive the funds from this collection every year. Thanks to the generosity of Catholics across the United States, we are able to give out grants to parishes and missions, schools, and other organizations that serve Native American Catholics and African American Catholics. So I'm the executive director of this organization that is involved in evangelization, faith formation, education, and other kinds of works, that Catholics are doing across the United States.
Okay, and it is an office that is under the U.S. Bishops Conference, correct?
No, we are independent.
Okay.
We are a standalone organization. We are overseen by the Archbishops of New York and Baltimore and Philadelphia. And it's been that way from the beginning.
Okay.
When the offices were formed, the United States was not that large, the Catholic Church was not that large. So early on, they decided that it would be good for these prelates from these, larger established dioceses to oversee the office. And so that's the way it's operated to the present
Okay,
day.
that makes sense. Now, tell us a little bit about the film Walking the Sacred Path. Is it fair to say that part of the film deals with the work of the Black and Indian Mission Office?
Yes. So the film looks at, different places that we serve. There are interviews with people who are involved in ministry, who are involved in education. We have young people who are interviewed. So it gives a representation of, Native American Catholics across the United States. It gives a sense of, the kind of support that the Black and Indian Mission Office provides for Native American Catholic ministry. And it provides a little bit of historical information. So the history is very long. It's very involved in the process of trying to figure out what we wanted to represent in the film. We looked at all of the missionary work that has been done among Native Americans since the first missionaries arrived, and there are thousands of people who dedicated themselves to ministry, to evangelization, to going to all different parts of the United States and Canada to bring the gospel message to Native people. And there's so much to tell. It's a really wonderful story, and we wanted to provide, some knowledge and information about this incredible history so that people could learn more about Native American Catholics, learn more about the missionaries and the people that serve this group of people to the present day.
Yeah, of course. Why is it titled Walking the Sacred Path?
We decided to call it Walking the Sacred Path because in the history, of the interactions and relationships between Native people in North America and the Europeans who came, there were a lot of injustices that took place. There was a lot of misunderstanding. There were a lot of agreements that were made that were not kept. And so we wanted to put a focus on, what Christ brings into the situation, which is himself. He is sacred, which means he's holy, which means he's true, which means he's just, which means he's loving. So it captures who Christ is and the role that Christ has to play in bringing about, reconciliation and unity among all of the peoples who live in North America. So that's what we're trying to get at in naming the film Walking the Sacred Path, because Christ is walking a sacred path in our midst, and we are invited to walk with him, to walk the same sacred path.
Yeah, I definitely like that title because it does evoke a little bit about our Catholic faith, but at the same time, it also I think it's true to the sacred path that Indigenous people, First Nations people, also walk, even if they're not Christian. Can you tell us a little bit about so the work that you do practically, like what does that look like on the ground with First Nations communities, either in big cities or in small communities, remote communities, that maybe don't have parishes.
So we offer support to ministry to Native Americans across the United States in urban areas and on reservations and in rural areas as well. The majority of Native Americans actually do not live on a reservation nowadays. So, a lot of the ministry takes place in urban areas mostly. So we provide support to different dioceses and ministry offices that are located in urban areas. We provide support to schools that are educating children. And likewise on the reservation, the missions and parishes and schools on the reservations were established for the most part more than 100 years ago, and they've endured to the present day. And I believe that, the support that our office provides financially and otherwise has enabled those places to continue and to thrive, for a long time in those communities.
You've said that the work, I mean, maybe the film also, that your hope is that the film is going to bring some awareness of the work and of the history, but also to help with fundraising. For our Canadian listeners, a lot of our listeners are actually in the United States, but we do have Canadian listeners who maybe are not
Yes.
familiar, maybe they're just hearing about the Black and Indian Mission Office right now. How do you suggest that they can support your work, or is there anything that they can do, or even if anything in Canada that they can support that parallels the work that your office is doing?
Sure. Yeah. Well, both in the US and Canada, the Conference of Bishops, are very engaged in ministry to the Native peoples in both countries. They have various offices and organizations at a national level, at a diocesan level, and also, people serving in parishes and local communities, mostly on reservations. So, they're very engaged in ministry to Native people in both countries. In Canada, there are organizations that are similar to organizations in the U.S. that serve Native Catholics. One that I can think of is the Guadalupe Circle, which is composed of Native Catholic leaders who meet together regularly to discuss ministry in their communities and also to serve as advisors to the bishops. We have those kind of organizations here in the U.S. So if Canadian listeners were interested in supporting what we do in our office, they can access our website, which they can find by doing a Google search for the Black and Indian Mission Office. We have a newsletter that we publish twice a year called The Sentinel. They can find information on our website about The Sentinel, and they could sign up to receive it. And they can also access the documentary that we created on our ministry with Native American Catholics on the website. It's at the very top of the website. It'd be easy for them to access it.
Yeah, and we're very excited that we are going to be airing your documentary, Walking the Sacred Path, on our network, Salt and Light TV, in next month in June, on Indigenous Peoples Day here in Canada on June 21st. Father
Right.
Henry, it's so good to have the opportunity to speak with you. So thank you for making the film. And it's good to
Well,
learn a little bit more about your work, and good luck. I'm sure our paths will cross, our sacred paths will cross again.
look
Thank you for
forward to that.
telling us all about your work today.
Welcome. Yeah, blessings to you and blessings to all of your listeners.
Father Henry Sands is the Executive Director of the Black and Indian Mission Office. You can learn more and support their work at blackandindianmission.org. In Canada, you can visit the Canadian Bishops' Conference to learn about the many initiatives they have for reconciliation, cccb.ca. And please note that Walking the Sacred Path will be airing on Salt and Light TV on June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So, Walking the Sacred Path, you can watch it on Salt and Light TV on June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, everybody, it's Hannah Schaefer, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro.
Have you downloaded the Salt and Light Plus app? That's the best place to listen to the Salt and Light Hour and get to watch all our TV programs. You can get it wherever you get your apps. And now it's time for our AI undercover missionary Mark Matthews, who is just very excited today.
Oh,
You're
and am
pumped
I
up. You're pumped.
am I ever? I mean, okay. So I kind of used to be, I still am, I guess, the Hollywood undercover missionary, but honestly, I was kind of like, I was already gravitating towards AI many years ago. I started giving talks on AI from a Catholic perspective, like, 5 years ago. And I would usually lead with a slide, which was a joke. And it said, oh, well, what does the church have to say about AI? Well, we only have to turn to the church's encyclical on AI, Artificia Sapientiosa, which is artificial intelligence in Latin.
In Latin, yeah, it doesn't
Yeah.
exist. Yeah.
And it was like, ha, as if the church would ever have an
Would ever have
encyclical.
an encyclical ba-doom-boom. Yeah, famous last
Ba-dum-boom.
words.
Yeah. Well, they have. So Just this past week, the Pope released Magnifica Humanitas. And so everybody's been talking about that translates to magnificent humanity. And one of its main topics is artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And so this is huge. I mean, yeah.
It is huge. And I know I was just going to interrupt because I think I love the title because, and I'm glad that you said that one of the main topics is artificial intelligence, but would you say that the encyclical is about artificial intelligence or it's about humanity? Is it about human, what it means to be a human being?
Yeah. Yeah, really. That's really what it is. And even, I mean, kind of the documents or the letters that led into this was Quo Vadis Humanitas, which is where are you going, humanity?
Yeah.
And it's really, honestly, like even when I explain a lot of things about like what AI is going to potentially, how it's going to influence us, it's like a supercharging of a lot of technological trends that we see already. So it's not just about AI. It's really about technology, I might say in general. But even the name that he chose, Leo the 14th mm-hmm. versus Leo the 13th, being on the anniversary of Rerum Novarum. Like, yep. And I would say the Industrial Revolution, you know, replaced human physical work. And I would say right. like AI stands to replace almost all human intellectual work. And so,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I might even say like AI sort of could historically be perceived as the crowning, quote unquote, achievement of, you know, of our technological age. So,
yeah, it's true. And I mean, right from the moment that Leo was elected a year ago, he said, you know, this is the Industrial Revolution of our day, mm-hmm. is artificial intelligence. So that's mm-hmm. it. So you've read it. You've already read that encyclical 5 times.
Okay. Well, I'm working. I'm
almost
through.
You haven't slept.
I've been working. Yeah. And everything I read, I'm just like, oh, I got to highlight that. And I got to highlight that. And the thing I love about it is that he's put into much better words and more inspired words than I've been able to come up with. But it's like all things I've kind of been trying to say and trying to express. And so like, I look at it, I'm like, oh, I could spend a whole career explaining this. And I'm kind of like, well, this is honestly the way I want to go is, you know, this is my area of research is AI.
That's great.
You know, I'm a Catholic. I love God. So
it's good to have the Pope helping you out with some quotes that you can steal.
Yeah. So I'll just start off with some great quote, just talk about some great quotes from it just because it's so good. Okay. One of the things that he talks about a lot is this idea of the technocratic paradigm. And he defines this as when technology becomes a standard by which everything is judged, reducing human beings to mere cogs in a system driven towards ever greater efficiency. Mm. And he's being very clear here. And he even says later, he says, our first task is to neither demonize nor idolize technological tools. So he's not saying that technology in and of itself is not evil. But when we become so fascinated by it that that's the only lens we see it through, well, then it becomes an issue. And, you know, like a story I always like to tell is I lived for a year at a place called Madonna House, which is a lay apostolate of men, women, and priests that live a life of poverty, chastity, and obedience.
With no technology.
With very, very limited or much lesser technology.
Yeah, telephones.
And I was helping sort donations. And so we had a truck. We would pick up bags from this one place and drive them to another and drive them here and drive them there. And I had just finished my undergrad in engineering. And I was just like so annoyed. I was like, this is so inefficient. I'm like, you could have a building. You could have a whole kind of assembly line sort of a thing. And it drove me nuts. But I realized after living there for a while, I'm like, it's not about efficiency. It's about people. It's about relationships. It's about love more than anything. But when we sort of so much focus on these things, technology, that becomes the lens by which we see and judge everything. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that he said in this document, even when these such ideas remain speculative, they gain relevance by altering the collective imagination and therefore influence social, economic, and political choices. So these ideas are influencing kind of how we're thinking about things. And in particular, talks a lot about how we think about people. And so one line really hit me. It said, the quality of a civilization is measured by its ability to recognize the other as a face, not merely as a function. And why that hit me is my research, my published research has things where we literally consider a human face as a function.
Interesting. So, that's such a good story. And I'd be happy with like, that's it. That's all we need to take. It's like, that's what the encyclical is really about, you know, like the concern.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, it happens in so many ways that I think technology abstracts the human away and we really do not see the full person behind it. You know, like I always say, it's like, you know, if you like in the comments section in a forum, like, do you say things that you would say to someone if you were face to face with them? Or, you know, do you, you know, say something very inflationary and perhaps offensive almost? And it's like, well, it's because that person's abstracted. They were just a comment generating function. You know, you're not actually replying to another human being is kind of how we think about it. Yeah. So
are there any thoughts from the Pope on whether like the thinking, and I guess that thinking that you're talking about that would kind of either seek to enhance what a human being is or even replace what a human being is?
So he has a whole section on this about transhumanism and post-humanism.
Okay.
And I mean, a lot of these things are kind of like crazy science fiction stuff, right? You know, like you think of like Star Trek and the Borg, you know, people becoming human cyborgs. But he says that even when such ideas remain largely speculative, they gain relevance by altering the collective imagination and thereby influence social, economic, and political choices. And so you could kind of think it's like there's almost this thinking that sort of pervades techie geeky minds that like, oh, we're going to find salvation in technology. We're going to invent, you know, eternal life. This does happen, you know, it almost becomes a pseudo religion in some ways. So you have to watch out for it. So,
yeah, exactly. And that's, I think what I meant when I said that I feeling is that the encyclical is not really so much about artificial intelligence as it is about
what it means
to be a human, what it means to be a human. Okay. So like, because we're totally almost out of time.
Yeah.
What would be your final thought for people who might be worried or.
Yeah. Maybe the best thought that summarizes that is he says, Christian humanism does not reject science or technology, but embraces them with gratitude and realism and grounds them within a higher vision or higher vocation. And that higher vocation being adopted children of God. So
Christian humanism does not reject science or technology. So yeah, but embraces them with gratitude and realism and grounds them within a higher vocation. That's a beautiful quote from Magnifica Humanitas.
Check it out. Almost take any paragraph in the whole thing is a zinger. It's got so much wisdom packed into it.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's so much wisdom that we're going to be revisiting this document over and over again with Mark
Many
Matthews.
Times.
Or you can just take the whole document, plunk it into ChatGPT, and it'll give you a good summary.
There we go.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for this.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Very interesting and so good to see you so excited about something. Mark Matthews, our artificial intelligence undercover missionary. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Mark Matthews works in tech and artificial intelligence. Coming up in our second half hour, motherhood and homeschooling with singer-songwriter Rebecca Roubillon, so don't go anywhere. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro.
So I homeschool part-time and send my kids to a little Catholic homeschool hybrid here in Nashville. And it's wonderful. And so we do a lot of music study. And my kids are actually taking, my oldest two are taking piano lessons. Anyway, it's just been really fun to pass that gift on to them.
That's Rebecca Roubillon telling us a little bit about what she does every day with her children. And we're going to be speaking with Rebecca Roubillon very shortly. But first, here's Rebecca Roubillon with Mother's Love.
This kind of love is some kind of miracle, more precious than a diamond stone. like a fountain, mighty like a mountain, softer than the sunrise tones, deeper than the ocean, soaring high like a dove. There's nothing like a mother's love. Savior, humble and quiet and kind. She was pierced by the sword at the cross of the Lord. They couldn't tear her away from his side. She was deeper than the ocean and pure as a dove.
That was Rebecca Roubillon with Mother's Love. We first met Rebecca Roubillon in 2014 after she had released 3 albums. Since then, Rebecca moved to Nashville, she got married, started a family, and released another album, Sleepless Nights, which we also featured on this program. Last time we spoke with Rebecca, it was 2024. She told us about licensing her music for television, which was a lot of fun and super interesting. And at the time, Rebecca had 4 children. But now there are 5. Needless to say, it's a busy household and there isn't a lot of time for music composition. But Rebecca is homeschooling, and so she joined us earlier this week to talk about that. Rebecca, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so good to be back.
It is so good to have you with us today. I was trying to remember last time we spoke, I think there were 3 children. Maybe the 4th one was on the way, but now there are 5 children. Mm-hmm. So that must be quite the handful. Tell us about your kids.
Right.
Tell us about them. What are their ages?
So Edith is 8. Jack is 7. Kit is 5. George is 3. Teddy is 1. That's just good. Under 2 years apart. Yeah.
It's good that you could rhyme that off without having to think about it.
I really had to think hard, actually.
So it sounds like quite the full house.
It's wonderful. It's joyful chaos, but it's a lot of joy. We try to instill order in our days as best we can, and then leave room for spontaneity too. And it's pretty noisy and lots of joy.
I can imagine. And is there a lot of music?
Yeah, well, it looks a little differently for me now, but we do a lot. So I homeschool part-time.
Okay.
And send my kids to a little Catholic homeschool hybrid here in Nashville. And it's wonderful. And so we do a lot of music study, and my kids are actually taking, my oldest two are taking piano lessons with this wonderful, wonderful Italian lady. She's 92.
Wow.
She's so cool. Her father was a composer, and anyway, it's just been really fun to pass that gift on to them. And my oldest is really competitive with it and really into it. My son Jack is, we're waiting to see how much he'll continue on with it. But it's just good to give them that gift of like the language of music, you know.
Absolutely. So is it, I want to talk about homeschooling a little bit later, but since we're talking about music, did you kind of tell them that they had to do piano, or did they have a choice as to what instrument they could play, or like how are you going about that?
So what I tell them is, I'm just going to give you the foundation on the piano. Yeah. Obviously, I play piano, so I'm a little biased here, but it's just all laid out right there in front of you, and it's very tactile. Like, you can see the notes. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to give them, the way I've explained it to them is, like, I want to give you the foundation in music on piano. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest instrument to start on. And then if you have an interest in another instrument, you know, when you're a little older, we can talk about exploring that.
Yeah, that's exactly what my mom did. She said, you know, she's like, if my kids have to learn math and history and science, they have to learn music, and everybody's going to do 4 years of piano. And then if you want to continue, you can do whatever instrument you want. So
I like that.
Yeah. Very, very, logical. Makes sense. Piano is the most, like tactile and visual, I guess.
Yes.
Instrument in that sense. Would that have been what your parents did with you? Is that how you started on playing the piano?
Yeah. So my dad is a bass player and a guitarist, and he, I need to ask them why they chose piano, because neither of them played. But what was really special is my dad took lessons with us alongside us. So our recitals, he didn't have to play his own recital piece, but he sometimes did duets with us.
That is so cool.
And and I think he came to really appreciate how simple piano is for a learning instrument. And then, my brother went on to play guitar and is an amazing guitarist.
Oh,
and I think
really?
That just, again, that foundation of just like learning it really simply. And then advancing in other instruments.
That's so good. So you got, your father plays bass, your brother plays guitar, you play the piano, you got five kids. So as long as they each pick a different instrument,
that's right,
you'll have a whole family band.
Oh yeah. And anytime we have a family vacation, we always jam out and like play.
Oh, how fun.
And sing together. And all the weddings, we usually have like a family band moment, and it's great.
So the music is there, obviously, the piano and the instruments and the singing. Do you have any children that are showing, you know, interest? I'm sure that there's always a lot of noise and a lot of singing, but is there any good singing?
You know, my second daughter, Kit, my third born, she is always singing, and like singing at the dinner table, and we have to be like, we love your voice, sweetie, but but my mom said, you know, that's how you were as a young girl. You were always singing. So, who knows?
She's paying you back for all the suffering you gave your parents at that dinner table.
Exactly.
Is there a reason why you're not the one teaching them piano, but you chose to send them to, because you're doing some of the homeschooling yourself.
Correct.
But not music. Is there a difference, or why did you make that choice?
Oh, I love that question. You know, it's funny. I was always a songwriter. And so as a music student, I was good in the sense that I would learn the songs as they were written and everything. Mm-hmm. But once I learned them, I basically memorized them. I was terrible in theory. And so for me to teach, I know I could do it for the first 1 or 2 years.
Right.
Like I can get by, but I literally still have to do like the acronym tricks to like find which note it is. Because I'm such a songwriter. I'm like I can do it by feel and by ear and by chords structures, but not theory.
Yeah, interesting. But wouldn't you say that that's the same with some other subjects? Like if you have to teach, I mean, presumably, I don't know how good you're at math or at some other, you know, subject, but as a homeschooling parent, you'd also have to kind of brush up on it and figure it out. Or are you relying, that's why the hybrid model also works for you?
Well, it's a both and for me. I love learning alongside them. And so actually, when they practice piano every day, I have to sit there with them at least for the first year.
Yeah.
And be like, oh yeah, like this is how I don't know how parents who don't play piano help their kid learn, because you have to know what position to start in. That's true. Have to know like at least some.
That's true.
And as far as the homeschool subjects go, I'm not really planning on doing like trigonometry. You know, I don't know how far I'll be able to go with that. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. We're taking it year by year, but right now kindergarten math is very much on my level. So
yeah, you can add 3 + 2.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And like, I think the other subjects, I mean, it'll be fun. Like I'm going to start teaching Latin next year and I don't know Latin. I know some basic Latin roots, but I'll be learning alongside them. And I think that's what's so attractive about homeschooling, is because you get to kind of relearn and then learn even more with your kids
as an
adult.
Right. And obviously you're following a curriculum. You're part of a homeschooling group. Is that what it's called?
That's right.
Can I ask you, I want to talk more about that, but can I kind of go back to the genesis? So you have, at what point did you decide with your husband, we're going to homeschool?
So we, it was around COVID, which I know a lot of people kind of discerned that around COVID, but it wasn't for the same reasons. Like my kids were at a little Christian preschool up the road here and so sweet, very precious. But we knew we wanted them in Catholic education. I had a wonderful Catholic school upbringing in Mobile, Alabama. Amazing experience, wonderful teachers, and I was catechized well in the faith. So that was the plan. And my husband was homeschooled later, like in middle school.
Okay.
So he was kind of indifferent. He's like, yeah, we'll do Catholic school. But when my kids were in preschool, my daughter, it just became very clear that like, because some of the friends she was making, their parents, even though we were at a Christian preschool, their parents, it just was very clear. Like there were some married couples that weren't aligned and it was starting to like threaten influence, which again, our kids are going to be in the world eventually. Mm-hmm. This isn't fear-based, but we just realized, okay, while they're little, we're not ready to have these complex like same-sex marriage parents conversations. Like let's really discern and pray over like where we want to send them. And so we actually switched parishes to a parish that was really, really alive with all these young families because we wanted to send them to that school. Mm-hmm. And that school is amazing. But when we were touring and we found this Catholic homeschool hybrid, I was like, you know what? I always felt called to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I didn't end up studying that in college. I studied communications, but I was so drawn to the classical mode of education, which is what Regina Chaley Academy does. They learn in a classical style of education. Lots of classic literature, the Latin.
Yeah.
It's oratory skills and logic and learning history through the lives of the saints and just very literature heavy and less textbook, which I was really attracted to. And then the community at this particular school was so just beautiful and devout. And I was like, this just feels, it was like a calling, really, honestly.
It sounds wonderful. So Regina Chaley is the name of the academy?
Correct.
You're listening to the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro, and we're speaking with Rebecca Rubillon about homeschooling. But I was intrigued about the idea of a hybrid. Like, how does that work? So that's where we continue.
So Mondays and Thursdays, they're in school with a uniform, with their peers and a teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like a Catholic school day.
Yeah.
But then on the rest of the other three weekdays, they're home with me and I'm teaching them the same curriculum that the school uses. And then I get to, obviously, I sprinkle some other things
in,
like music and art study and different things like that. And lots, I do a lot of reading aloud with them, which is really, so a big fruit of homeschool is just the connection time you get with your kids.
Yeah, of course.
Too.
Of course.
Yeah. But I love that they get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Do you find, and because I've heard some parents will say that they find it difficult because they're also the disciplinarian and the parent, and that it's hard to. So, I mean, I guess that's part of parenting, but it's also part of teaching. But at the same time, every part of your day becomes a teaching moment, which I think it should be, right? So if you're making lunch, then that's also part of, right?
We cook together. But, you know, I will say, like, whether you're teaching your kids formally, as the parent, you are their primary teacher and influencer.
Absolutely.
And so I tell people all the time, they're like, I don't know how you're doing that. I'm like, actually, you're teaching your kids. That's what parenting is. You're teaching them about life. And so I'm just the primary influence. As far as the discipline goes, I do get pushback from my kids. They don't want to do school. They don't want to work with me. You know, we're at home, so they want to eat all the time constantly, you know? So there's challenges as well, and there's interruptions, but, I really, really love that they're getting more and more independent. And they're also, because we're part of a hybrid, there's that exterior motive of, oh, well, I have to bring this into school. So I really do need to get this done because I have to tell my teacher why I didn't complete this work. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, like I'm saying.
It does sound like it. And I think that is definitely the best homeschooling model. It sounds like, I mean, had we spoken 6 years ago, you would have really, you know, even though you felt called to marriage and family life, that you're very much a musician, a songwriter. But it sounds like in some ways you're also finding like your vocation in a different way. Not that you're less of a songwriter or a musician, but this is, being a mother is giving you a creativity that maybe you hadn't found before. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. And I'm being a mother, anyone who's a mother knows that you're constantly creatively being resourceful and drawing upon your imagination to kind of like awaken wonder in your children and to inspire them and also to pour truth into them in a way, in a language that they can understand. And it's very much, I feel like closer to God the Father because I get to pour into them creatively and know them more intimately in their love languages. And I'm doing my most creative work.
Yeah. Do you feel that because your creative output has taken a different shape, that the music... I know you haven't been writing a lot of new music. So is it, I don't want to say that once, you know, it's like, not like you're choosing or that you're sacrificing or making a choice to not do music, but you find it's like a different season, like the output, you're still being creative. So you don't feel that you need to be creative in a musical sense.
Honestly, because people say, oh, you need to keep doing music. And I'm like, I don't know what God is doing. Well, I do. I know he's, we talked before we went on. I know he's doing like fertilizing, like he's working with the soil of my heart, and my creative gift is still there. My love for music is still there, but I'm not pining over my music career. Like, oh, I wish I could be doing that instead of what I'm doing. I feel so creatively fulfilled with my work in the home. And also, but I don't want to hide my gift under a bushel basket or whatever the parable is. Like, I do lead worship occasionally. We have this event in our backyard called Weenies in Worship, which is hilarious.
Fun. Oh, I love that.
It's just a grill out, and we, some friends of mine play worship music, and it's a great time. And I perform on occasion when I'm asked, but I'm not touring, obviously. I'm not like mm-hmm. recording as much. And I'm honestly so at peace with that.
Yeah. It's a different season.
It's just a season. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it is. Do you find that, I mean, I don't remember if you are the journaling type or how you, you know, where your songwriting came out of. But it's not like you feel like you have to be writing about motherhood or there are all the songs that come out of you now are all, you know, little kid songs about brushing their teeth.
Yeah, right. No, I am the journaling type, and the first poem I wrote as a high schooler became my first song. So I love to write and mm-hmm. journal. And actually I've been writing poetry a little bit. And some of it is about motherhood. Mm-hmm. Some of it is just like my reflections and musings. And then I've also been painting and shooting photography.
Oh, wow.
So I just here and there, like I just doing, following kind of my own whims, I guess you could say, of what is inspiring me at the moment.
Well, you're being creative and that's great. That's great. I think that's good advice for all parents, but mothers, mm-hmm. especially mothers of five children to, you know, you still mm-hmm. can be creative. And obviously you find time to do some music and do some photography and do some painting. Do you think that maybe the songwriting can become a homeschool lesson with some of your children as they get older?
Oh, definitely. I want to teach them kind of how to start from nothing and create, whether it's poetry or creative writing or even songwriting.
Yeah.
And actually, a group of friends, of mine, like I think there's 9 families, all the husbands are friends and all the wives are friends. We put on this little camp for our kids, obviously just like a private little camp.
Yeah.
And they at this, you know, we kind of use each other's gifts to do that kind of thing. And we also do little retreats together. And they said, Rebecca, why don't you work with the young girls and have them perform a song? And then also with the older girls, like coach them in songwriting if they're interested in that. Mm. And then, so I definitely think it's something I'll explore with my kids. And now that they're learning an instrument, like I can, you know, they need to be a little older, I think. To get there, but I think, and also playing by ear, mm-hmm. you know.
That's true. That's a good skill.
Which is another, a totally different musical skill that classically trained musicians may not have. So
anyway, Rebecca, it's so good to connect with you. So happy to learn a little bit more about homeschooling. I'm sure that that's going to be interesting for our listeners, and maybe some of them can relate as they also struggle with their homeschooling. So thank you for the inspiration and the ideas and again also for sharing your music with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll be praying for you and all your listeners. God bless you. Thank you.
You can learn more about Rebecca Rubillon at her website, rebeccarubillon.com, and you can follow her on Instagram. And to listen to this interview again or to the whole program, go to our website, slmedia.org. Here now to take us out is Rebecca Rubillon with her single, Call On Me.
Something made me think of you today. Turned a light on, stopped me in my place. Without knowing it, a smile was on my face. Out of the blue, I thought of you. Times like these, I got a grateful heart. All the air I need, a sky full of stars. A place to rest my head, it ain't too far. And you, my friend, tell me where you've been. 'Cause if you need to talk or not, speak it all. If you had the best of days or one of those that just went wrong, whatever it might be, oh, you can always call on me.
We're listening to Rebecca Rubillon with her single Call on Me, and that will take us to the end of the program. The best place to listen to the Salt and Light Hour is on our app, the Salt and Light Plus app. That's also where you can watch all Salt and Light media programs, TV series, and documentaries. You can also listen to the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Once you find us, please subscribe so you don't miss one single episode, and give us lots of stars so that others can also find the podcast. In the coming weeks, we're going to learn about the Eucharistic revival that's coming to Detroit, and also about the new Avila Catholic app. Yeah, look it up. And we will meet a few new Catholic singer-songwriters, so you don't want to miss our next couple of shows. Today, let's continue to pray. Let's pray for peace, especially in the Middle East and in Ukraine. Let's never stop praying for peace. Let's also pray for our Indigenous brothers and sisters, and for blessings upon all the great reconciliation projects. Let's also pray for all homeschooling parents and children. And let's pray that we stay rooted in Christ and that we don't let artificial intelligence replace or redefine our concept of what it means to be human. And I also pray for you, my dear listeners. I pray that this program has blessed you. Thank you for hanging out with me this hour. Please pray for me, and don't forget to pray for each other and take care of each other. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour.
A heart is to replace. For me, it's true.